Hey everyone, I am the Chosen One Legend here, as usual with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Kai, also known as Faskarine on Twitch.
And welcome to our podcast, Bunch of Jokers, but a very special episode because we are not alone here. We have with us a guest star, the voice actor behind such roles in anime and gaming as Subaru in ReZero and Revali in Breath of the Wild, Sean Chiplock. Hi, Sean.
Hello, hello. Hey. How are you all tonight?
Calm yourself, Kai.
All right.
Calm yourself.
Hey.
Hey.
We do appreciate a good pun here, so already on a good to start. So.
Sure. I mean, as an English voice actor, I actually don't have a physical form anymore. It's just my vocal cords and my voice print. So many
of
people
course.
Don't know this, but I actually only exist when I can be on a podcast or some sort of interview like this, because then I exist on the airwaves. But as soon as you guys like cut the feed to this, I just won't be part of this realm anymore until you publish it. But then I'll be immortal, so it all works out.
Oh, so that's why you agreed to do this with us then, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Because prior to this, I was trapped in someone's smart fridge, and that was just absolute agony. So
thank you
for freeing me from that obesity-laden prison.
Anytime, you know. Always here for that. But yeah, we're all doing great here. How are you doing, Sean, besides being stuck in a smart fridge?
To be honest, I often describe to people that a lot of my life tends to go week by week, where I like kind of set everything up at the beginning of the week, see what's going to be coming down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then usually the weekend is open to myself. But over the last couple of months, and especially ever since I upgraded my home studio, it has really just become an everyday thing. Every morning I wake up, and before I start my morning recording session, which is usually around 9 or 10 in the morning, I have like 10 minutes to check my email, which almost always has at least 3 auditions I got to take care of sometime that same day, and someone asking what my avail is for either later that week or the next coming week. And for example, even today, I had someone asking if I can devote at least 3 hours every single weekday through the end of October. For an upcoming project. And that's before any stream stuff, that's before any other gigs I book, that's before any auditions. So last month, over 80% of the weekdays had at least 2 recording sessions, and it's looking like that trend is going to continue into this month. So I'm staying on top of it at the moment, but it's my daily life can be best defined as where my 1 hour breaks are. And I mean that between 9 a.m. and midnight.
Wow. Yeah.
That is crazy. That is...
Yeah.
Life of a voice actor, right?
I mean, I'm happy to be that busy.
Yeah. I mean, that makes me feel a little bit inadequate just playing Mario 64 all day now, but...
Oh, I'm still doing that. That's part of my stream. So, but even that's not playtime for me. That's work. That's, have to broadcast to, you know, a bunch of people and make it entertaining for them to watch you. No pressure.
Right.
Definitely. Well, we're great that really grateful that we've been able to grab some of your spare time to join this podcast with us. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean,
for
you're paying me the
along.
$500 afterwards, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
Sam.
Right?
Sam's doing all that. We'll leave
that
to
he's right? all payments. Of course.
Right. Sam? No. I appreciate it. As generally, as long as folks are willing to work around my existing schedule, then I will do what I can to fit it in, unless I literally am not in a vocal health place to be able to do it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, it's great to have you here, and you know we've got a good video ahead of us. Kai and I have both got a handful of different questions to ask about both yourself and your career. We're mostly focusing on gaming and sort of Nintendo, because that's where our, in quotation marks, expertise lie. But, you know, feel free to go wildly off topic, because we do it all the time anyway, so...
Oh, good. I'm glad I got permission instead of just doing it without your permission.
Of course. But if you're ready, then we'll get started on things. For the audience watching, there will be timestamps in the description below if you want to jump around to different sections, but we always recommend giving the whole thing a watch. It's going to be a good time, so let's get on with things. So, you know, before we talk a bit more specifics about sort of your career, we just wanted to talk with you a bit about your experience in gaming outside of work. So, because it appears to me from looking at your like Twitch streams and your Twitter posts that gaming is as much of a hobby for you as it is a career. Would you say that's the case?
It definitely is. The ironic thing being that I think the only reason why my gaming hobby is still around is because I kind of shoehorned it into Twitch streaming. Because prior to me starting up Twitch streaming, there was that brief period between when the pandemic first started and when I started doing the streaming 5 days a week, where I just did not have any time to myself. Like, the only time that I played games was when I was streaming. And even now that's the case, but it still feels like now that I've found a certain routine that works for me, like when I have my stuff, because I use the same laptop for streaming out here in the main living room that I use for recording professional stuff in the studio room. So generally what I try to do is I have a morning session almost every day. So I set the laptop up in there. And then once I'm done with that session, I will do as much as I can before taking the laptop out of the studio room. Because mentally at this point, as soon as it's out of that studio room and it's set up for stream, it's not going back in that studio room until the next time I have a recording session. Like, I'm not going to move all the wires and stuff like that to do it a second time. Right. So it has kind of boded well for my work ethic because it's pushed me to get as much done as I can before I come out and do stream. But it also has allowed me to separate my work and private time. So once I move it out here and I do the stream and the stream is done, I don't feel compelled to set everything back up and go back into the studio room to record. I'm like, nope, that happens tomorrow. Right now is my downtime after my stream is over. And I think that's something I sorely needed, even if I have less time to myself than usual.
That definitely does sound like a healthier lifestyle for you, though, like being able to separate it very clearly compared to when you maybe couldn't in the past with all
that
sort of thing.
It's not the healthiest, but it's definitely better than what I was doing previously.
Yeah, it's getting there at the very least.
Going back a bit further to before it became sort of your career and to do with your streams, do you remember how you first got into gaming in the first place? Was there any particular childhood games of yours you really love?
My mom says that when she was carrying me around in utero for 9 months, at first she could drink hot sauce and that's what would quiet me down. But then I obviously developed a taste for hot sauce and it wasn't enough to quell me anymore. So she says the next thing that she did was swallow a Game Boy and a 12-pack of AA batteries, and that lasted until it was time for me to be born. Assuming her story is true, that's where my love of gaming started. But like from the earliest years that I remember, I had a Game Boy and a Nintendo Entertainment System, and so I grew up on like RBI Baseball, on Tetris, on Mega Man 6, on The Legend of Zelda and Link's Adventure, Super Mario Brothers 3. I had all of them. So
that's a good era of gaming. So you've got a good choice there.
I pretty much stayed Nintendo throughout all of my childhood. I know we had a PS2 at one point, but I forget who originally purchased that. But I was pretty much all Nintendo until I moved out to California and did my QA job for NIS America, because that's what introduced me to dungeon crawlers and more specifically, the PlayStation Vita, God rest its soul. And that I kind of turned PlayStation heavy for a while, but specifically PS Vita, because that's where all the really good dungeon crawler JRPGs were. And then around when the Switch came out, the Switch I didn't end up really paying attention to until about a year after it was out. I forget what it was, either a year or two. When did the Switch come out? Was that 2018? No,
2017. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was when Breath of the Wild came out. It was launch day. Okay, so it was either a year or a year and a half later, and I didn't truly realize the importance of the Switch as a portable console until I brought it with me to go to a convention that I was a guest at, and I fired up Chocobo Mystery Dungeon Everybody while I was at the airport, and that was the first time I'd ever played the Switch undocked. And that was the moment that I went, oh, I get it now. Yeah. And immediately after that, I hard pivoted back into the Nintendo fan base.
Saying about like the PS Vita, I mean, it makes sense that you'd enjoy the handheld elements of the Switch involved in it as well. That's half of the console, so.
I from the moment I realized that was a thing that I could do, I never was bored on a plane flight ever again.
Definitely. I mean, the ability to have such big games as like Breath of the Wild on the go anytime, that really is something you can't get anywhere else at the moment. So
it's crazy.
It's definitely a big selling point.
So do you think your taste in games has been affected by your career at all in gaming?
Not really. A lot of people say, does it ever feel weird to hear yourself in the games that you play? And my answer is no, but I can't answer that for real because I don't ever seem to voice in the games that I play. Because a lot of the games that I play are like dungeon crawlers and mystery dungeon games. And most of the mystery dungeon games, whether it's Etrian Odyssey or Pokemon, tend to not have English voiceover. Now, there were some cases, for example, Mary Skelter was a project I was really excited about because I voice in it. And on my Twitch right now, I'm actually dedicating the next month straight to Trails of Cold Steel 1 through 3, because a lot of people have been requesting that, because Cold Steel 4 is coming out in a month, and I want to stream that as well. And it just made sense because I voice Rein Schwarzer in all three of those games. So it was kind of a natural transition of, hey, people are requesting this, and there's relevancy to me as a streamer, so why not go for it?
Definitely. Seems like a perfect opportunity to bring them together.
But that's a really big reason why when people say, you know, what's a role that you really want to have? The only one that I actually care about is that I want a voice in an Etrian Odyssey game. Because Etrian Odyssey is done on the 3DS, but they have not ruled out the possibility of a future entry being on the Switch. So if I could be on an Etrian Odyssey game on Switch that I can stream, oh man!
That's the dream. Boy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Switch is getting a bit of everything nowadays, really. There's all sorts of games that were going to be sort of more 3DS focused and that coming over to the Switch, like, you know, Bravely Default, for example. So it's definitely in the realms of possibility, and that would be a really cool thing to see.
Right.
But speaking a bit more on your Twitch, actually, so you stream on Twitch on, I believe it's twitch.tv/SonicMega, is that right?
Yes, it's the same as my Twitter.
And you've actually recently reached a bit of a landmark, haven't you?
We're not sure yet, because I do know that very recently I hit all of the Path to Partner achievements necessary to apply to be a partner. However, I don't think we're out of the woods, because from what I've been told, one, and I believe this fully, there's a huge backlog of partner applications because of how many people got into streaming as a result of the pandemic. So even though the application site says if you met all the requirements, then your application will be reviewed within 7 days. If you're applying just because of a social media presence, it could take 2 to 4 weeks. But a lot of people said it could be anywhere from 4 weeks to 4 months before they actually check your application.
Wow.
What's worse, jeez, and I don't know if this is true, but this is what I've been told, is that when they actually look at your application, they actually only count the 30-day period from when they looked at your application and back.
Really?
So even though I applied on, let's say, September 21st when I was eligible, and that 30-day period was like August 24th through September 21st or something like that, if they don't actually review the application until October 30th, then presumably they would only count the average of October 1st to October 30th. And if that's below 75, then they'll say, oh, sorry, it didn't meet this metric, reject it, and then I have to wait a third of a year before I can try again.
So you've got to retain all of those viewers through that entire time.
It's
75.
Presumably,
average,
yes.
Right?
Now, there was no benefit to, for example, waiting a couple months before applying, because it, for all I know, that just might make the queue even longer. So it was in my best interest to apply as soon as I was able to. But the fact remains, I don't know when they're going to actually look at it. So until further notice, the fact that I hit the milestone means absolutely nothing. Because if I dip below 75, they could check it at any moment and go, nope, I'm only seeing 72 here. Rejected.
Yeah,
right.
That's rough for sure. But hopefully we can keep that momentum going, though. So if anyone watching hasn't checked out the streams yet, go give it a look. We'll have a description. We'll have a link in the description.
So, I was legit hoping that I could tell people in my Discord that the numbers game was over, that people didn't have to care anymore. But if it's any consolation to folks, I give away a crap load of stuff. Like every time I beat a game, every time I beat a game on stream, I always give out at least one free copy to someone that's in the chat.
Oh, nice.
I think I gave out I gave out something like 20, 25 copies of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. Literally, we tallied it up, and we tallied it up, and I gave away about $1,100 worth of subs and game copies before I was done with Crystal Chronicles. And I don't ask for subs. I don't care about your money. I don't want your money. I just want the views so that I can hit partner and not have to care about it anymore. I do not do Twitch for the money. So,
right. Out of curiosity, what exactly does partnership mean for the channel? How does that affect the channel?
So, it's mostly, like, I don't have any specific plans once I hit partner, but it's twofold. One is just the relief of not having to care about whether you're hitting a certain viewer count. It's the idea of, because once you hit partner, you don't have to maintain a 75 average permanently. You just have to stay active and not break their terms of service. So, it's one of those, once you've got it, you can just sit on it, you know, as long as you're still using the platform. But also, being partner gives you access to streamer tools that ironically would make it a lot easier for non-partners to hit partner. For example, the ability to multi-stream, to do collab streams with other streamers where you're like sharing the same window. It's just, it gives you extra tools and options. I believe also partners are able to get access to additional emote slots based on how many subscribers they have. And I've been stuck at the 5 level 1 emotes, the two level 2s and 1 level 3 for forever. And in the meantime, the Discord server has like 50 something emotes that were personally commissioned or hand created by the community that I would love to feature on my Twitch channel, but can't because I don't have those spaces yet.
Right. Yeah.
Well, so that's really it. Is one, not having to care about viewer numbers anymore, and two, getting to add a bunch of emotes.
I mean, I do love me some good emotes. That all seems worthwhile to me. Anyone who hasn't, do go check it out. Like I said, there will be a link in the description below. But to go back a little bit, and of course now you're sort of getting towards this landmark, but how did you actually start off with Twitch streaming? What made you decide to start streaming?
Well, I'd wanted to stream for years, but there were two cowardly excuses keeping me from it. One was, I don't know if I have enough time to stay committed to it, and two was, I don't know if I have enough space to set up all the streaming equipment. Because I was familiar with, you know, the green screen, the atmosphere lighting, you know, whatever decorations are going on in the background, the equipment itself. Well, the pandemic kind of solved one of those, which was, I don't know if I have enough time, because the initial interest came back when that first month was happening where no voice actor was working at all. Like, to give you an idea of how much free time I had, that 1 month of Animal Crossing New Horizons, I logged more hours on that game than I did in 2.5 years of owning Smash Brothers.
Wow.
That's impressive.
I didn't believe it either, but according to my Switch, I have more hours in New Horizons than I do in Smash Bros. Ultimate. And I was part of the tournament scene. I was bringing my Switch to tournaments and running the game for 4 or 5 hours at a time.
Sean, was it the terraforming?
No, actually.
Really?
It was. Okay. It wasn't. It was just straight up, like, catching fish and collecting furniture. I wish I could tell you. I think it was just fish farming to build up bells. Honestly.
Right, okay.
So once the time excuse was taken care of and I found out that I didn't need as much space as I thought, that's when I was like, okay, I can start doing this. And obviously, you know, my first couple of streams were very quality challenged, but I got help from some veterans like Mike Feedback, Mike the Microphone, who I basically owe my current setup to, with additional thanks to people like Barkus, who made banners for me. And then right around when I went, haha, you know, I've got this down to a science. I can start streaming more regularly. That's when the work started coming back. So now I was already too thick into it to just be like, oh, I've been doing this for a month and a half. Now I'm just going to not do it ever again. But now it's like, as soon as the work came back, it came back harder than ever. And because I'm working from home, I don't really have the excuse of, oh, I'm going to get back too late because of the commute time to bother streaming. So now I'm just doing both every day.
Yeah.
And it's really exhausting.
That is a rough workload. But I mean, do you enjoy it though, still?
It's hard to give this a description because what I'm saying, I mean what I'm about to say, 100%. This is not me giving a frou-frou answer to try and like sugarcoat it.
Okay.
It's really stressful. Like, there are a lot of times where I finish a session at, like, 3 p.m., and I know the stream's at 5, and I get really stressed out because I have basically enough time to eat something and take a half-ass nap, and then I have to go right back to performing, quote-unquote. So there are a lot of days where I'm like, I really don't want to do this. Like, I'm really stressed out. But I stream, and I still have fun, and I'm enjoying myself with the community, and everyone's really understanding, and on the rare occasions where I'm like, I'm going to take it easy tonight, everyone's been super supportive. So it's like, it's super exhausting, and I hate it some days, but I still do it because it's fun.
Yeah, I feel you there. Like, with streaming, yeah, that's definitely the case.
And I know that might not make sense, but, like, the way I look at it, it's no different than voiceover. You know, for all the days that I'm like, I'm really exhausted and I didn't like what I did for that performance or that audition, you know, I'm upset with myself right now. There are the days when I kill a 45-second screaming section in a single take and I get to celebrate that with people. It's the same with streaming, where for all the times where I'm like, wow, the stream only ended at like 10 p.m. and my entire evening's gone. I've got no time to myself. There's the times like with the 19-hour Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles stream where we just ended up having an experience together, and I got to share that with everyone who was watching, and that's the exact thing I was going for when I tried streaming in the first place.
That's a great aspect of Twitch, having the community, because funnily enough, Kai and I actually met through a Twitch community, so it really does bring people together. It's a really great place for that.
Yeah.
So basically what I tell people is, it's naive to think that whatever hobby you have is going to be perfect and happy and sunshine all the time. There are going to be occasions where you're like, I hate this with every fiber of my being. But it stays as a hobby because at the end of the day, the good outweighs the bad. So that's why I hope people understand that as stressful as streaming is for me, I might as well have ADHD. If I wasn't interested in it, I wouldn't be doing it still.
Right. Okay. I mean, so of course we can find you at twitch.tv/SonicMega, but I'm curious, what is the origin of the username Sonic Mega?
I was 12 years old on the IGN forums, and I had to lie and say I was 13 before I could make an account, and it asked for a username, and I obviously couldn't think of a username at first, so in my infinite wisdom for, I don't know, fifth grade, maybe? No, sixth. Let's see, if I was 12 years old, I was 18 right as I went off to high school, so minus 6 years. So second grade, really? Really? Jesus, who let me online?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's ridiculous. Second graders should not have access to the internet. No.
Okay, I mean...
I have to have that... No, sixth grade. I had it backwards. Because for some reason I was thinking college was 9th through 12th. No, 9th through 12th is high school. So that's why it seemed weird. It was middle school.
Well, Kai and I are both UK based, so actually I have no clue what you're saying when you mention those dates.
If we convert US school years to UK school years, second grade is actually like 3.5th grade in UK. So, So I just came in my infinite wisdom. I took my two favorite video game characters at the time, which were Sonic and Mega Man, and I slammed them together, and the algorithm went, hey, that's not taken. And, you know, the more time went on, the more I realized that I had a pretty good name going for me because I didn't have to add, like, tildes or underscores or, like, six numbers at the end or, like, a set of X's at the beginning and end. It was just Sonic Mega. So
it has a ring to it.
As long as it's been working, I've kept it.
You know, you chose names better as a 12-year-old than I did. My name I chose at that time was a Nintendonator 3000. So,
I mean, my AOL name was Freestyler 77, and that did not age well in the realm of internet chat rooms.
Ah,
that is way too cool. I'm sorry, like, you can't keep that name. All right. So, I guess, going back into voice acting, like, how did you very first get into it? What's the origin story for that?
Well, depends. Do you want the first time that I was doing it, or the first time that I discovered it?
I suppose first time you discovered it.
Yeah. First time I discovered it was, and I've told this story a lot of times, I was on the Adult Swim website at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, because I was super bored and procrastinating homework as usual.
And I ended up seeing a behind-the-scenes clip for the upcoming episode of Trinity Blood, which was airing on Adult Swim at the time. And one of the little factoid bubbles took you to a side video where it showed Troy Baker recording as Abel Nightroad in the booth. And that was the first time I'd ever seen an actor talking at the same time that another camera was showing the character's lip flaps moving on the anime. And that's when I put two and two together and I was like, oh, that's right. These voices are coming from actual people. It's not just the character talking. And at the time, I was like, I don't know what this is or how they do this, but I want to be a part of this. And it was a stronger attachment than usual because prior to that, there wasn't really any subject in high school that I cared about enough to want to pursue after high school ended. So this was the first time that I saw something and personally was like, I want to learn more about this.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, going off of that, you've gone on to voice in a multitude of different projects. You know, there's such huge games as Fire Emblem, Persona, and of course Zelda, and the anime as well. Now, Kai and I are not particularly well-versed in anime, but even we recognize, you know, such big names as JoJo's, Demon Slayer, ReZero. But having voiced in all these different projects, how does it compare voicing in a video game to an anime? Is it a very similar process or quite different?
I actually don't know if I'm the best person to answer that because compared to my colleagues, my anime portfolio was really small. Like,
oh, really?
Guido Mista was the... ReZero was the first major role that I had in an anime since moving out here in 2013. Huh. And Guido Mista is the first major anime role where the character doesn't die. I mean, Subaru technically doesn't die, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yes.
So... But to answer the other part of the question, it is extremely different, which is ironic because anime is one of the lowest paying forms of voiceover in the industry. Video games, typically, even if you're matching a Japanese track, you often only have to match for emotion, not necessarily the length of the line. Even then, there are different ways that you can say a line and fit it within 4 or 5 seconds. You don't have to match lip flaps. Anime, you not only have to match the intensity and the emotional context, but you can only be talking when the lip flaps are open. And that means if there's a sentence where, like, the lips close briefly for, like, half a second in between the two halves of the line, you have to find a way to say the line where that pause seems natural. And it can be really hard sometimes.
Wow, that does sound really difficult. Because, I have noticed watching, when you compare games to anime, often games, the lip syncing isn't always as matched up. But in anime, I haven't watched too much, but the little I've seen, it always seems pretty perfect and spot on. So I didn't realize they actually had to match it up like that. That's
You would be surprised how often the English dub will strive to perfectly match the lip flaps where the Japanese audio doesn't even bother. There have been times... oh my God. There have been so many times in ReZero where Subaru's flaps are open a full half second before you hear the character talking. It's stupid how lenient they are.
Oh, wow. Wow, I didn't even know about that. That's interesting. Huh.
I mean, I'm not blaming them. I don't know if, some anime series take a process of, we prefer a better performance versus a more fitting performance to the lip flaps. But there are times when it's very obvious that the character's mouth is closed for longer than normal, and the person is still talking the whole time, and you're just expected to take that.
Yeah, because, Kai and I are both big fans of the game Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and that game is sort of known for having the lip syncing a bit out of it. And there's some points when you can sort of suspend your disbelief a bit and sort of get over it. But there's certain moments where it's just enough out of sync that it takes you out of it a little bit, and that's when it can be a bit more of a problem. But from watching the anime series, I've recently been watching ReZero, and... No, I haven't noticed that in the slightest. It really is all synced up perfectly, so that's quite an impressive feat, really.
Right.
But, you know, we won't dwell too much on anime, because Kai and I would probably show our inner expertise, because neither of us are particularly well-versed. But I have recently started, in the past year or so, started to get into a bit more anime, and just in the past week, I started watching ReZero. And Matt, I'm really enjoying it for a start. It is a great, great series. I was going to say a lot of fun. At the moment, it's quite bleak, but in a very good way, because I've been on the edge of my seat the entire time. I'm about 2/3 of the way through season one. To give you a bit of a point, the word sloth now scares me, so that's about where I am. But
I don't know what that means, and I don't think I want to.
You don't. It's terrifying. But
okay.
I'm literally lying awake at night thinking of, like, okay, what does this mean? Where does this go? So it's all really interesting, and, you know, the voice cast do an excellent job. It's really great to see voice actors you can tell are passionate for their work they do. And, of course, you voice Subaru in it. So how was that for you, being your first anime role?
Or one of yours? I was taken aside before I was cast or recommended to be cast, and reinformed of how vocally intense it would be, but having seen the series before auditioning, I knew what I was signing up for, and I also knew this was possibly the best opportunity to make a strong first impression in the lead role scene. So I was ready for it. Like, I was scared, but scared in a confident way.
Yeah, and
it was the sort of, I know what I need to do, I just need to make sure I actually do it.
You can tell it paid off, because really, Subaru has such a lot of really intense moments. I just watched an episode just recently where he had like a good 10-minute monologue, it felt like. It really, a lot of shouting and intense, so that must have been quite a strain on your voice.
Yeah, it can be.
It definitely has paid off in creating a really great performance. But to give a bit of more fun question, let's say, I'm going to give you a bit of a hypothetical. So let's flash back to the first episode of ReZero, but let's say that instead of appearing in the world of ReZero, Subaru appears in the world of Hyrule from Breath of the Wild. We're talking after the Calamity, so everything's gone bad and the world's in a bit of chaos. My simple question is, how long do you think Subaru would last?
When he arrives, is he in the middle of a war-torn area that's full of monsters, or is he in a relative, quote-unquote, temporary safe zone, where maybe nothing bad is happening yet, but if he just stood there, then something would find its way to him?
I guess to make it more comparable to the show, let's say he appears in a village, like Hatano, for example.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, depending on who he aligns himself with, I feel like he would fare better than usual, because a lot of the monsters in Legend of Zelda and around Hyrule are fantastical, but they're not overpowered the way that Elsa and Garfield and a bunch of other characters are. So he definitely would have a challenge ahead of him, but it wouldn't be like, here's an average human versus... you know, someone who has pinpoint accuracy and can't be hit and can create clones of themselves on a whim instantaneously. You know, even Link has often said he's a relatively normal person who happens to wield magical items. So that's different from being someone who is basically a Super Saiyan.
Yeah, that is true.
I feel like he'd just explore the world of Beedle. They'd go on a great love journey together, and I think it'd be great.
Right.
I'd watch that.
Kai, is this a good time to mention you've never seen any of ReZero?
Probably.
But I like your hypothetical anyway. But yeah, I definitely think that'd make sense. You know, maybe if he, talking about who he aligned himself with, maybe with having his phone on him, he might be directed to the research facility that's in Hatano, maybe. So... I could see him aligning himself with them, perhaps, somehow. But that's a bit interesting hypothetical there.
Right.
Right?
But I guess we should carry on with Breath of the Wild, right? Should we do that? So,
take it away, guys.
I guess, yeah, we'll focus on some Breath of the Wild for a little bit. So, did you know, for 2017's Breath of the Wild, especially, did you know that you were auditioning for a Zelda game back then? And what was it like when you found out?
I originally thought it was for a Dragon Quest game. Just the way just the way that the characters had been codenamed and the accent that they were looking for, it smelled really strongly of Dragon Quest, especially because I had been playing a Dragon Quest game at the time. I was like, I see some similarities here.
Right.
It wasn't until I did the callback and I was driving home and I was thinking about one of the codenames, which was, and I kid you not, really big plant. And I went, and I went, wait a second. No. Because I remember when I went in for the callback, they didn't show me artwork for any of the characters that I was auditioning for, but they did show some concept art. And I distinctly remember pointing to it and going, you know what's really funny? You know what this character art style reminds me of? Xant from Twilight Princess.
Right. Oh,
and it didn't even cross. So I thought about that statement, and I thought about Really Big Plant, and I went, no way.
All came
no
together.
Way.
I am the really big plant. Just...
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, that must have been a great moment to... I guess, was it exciting to figure that out then and have it all revealed to you that you were working on a Zelda
game?
Oh,
no, it was. I was scared. I was scared because the only... Well, think about this. Prior to Breath of the Wild, which other Zelda games had voice acting?
Good point.
The CDI games, but, you know, we overlook
okay,
those.
Okay, what else?
Yeah, those are perfect, nothing. So they don't count.
Nothing else. Nothing, exactly. No. So... When Breath of the Wild came out, what frame of reference would people have for canon Zelda or for voiceover in Zelda games?
Yeah. That's about it.
Yeah. That's it. So my immediate thought was, do not give anyone a reason to go, this is why they should have stopped after the CDI games. So I knew, because that was people's only frame of reference. Yeah. Mario at least had voices since Super Mario Sunshine. But Zelda didn't even have anything close to that. So I was not able to actually, like, relax and celebrate until the game was out and people didn't hate it.
Yeah, I'd like to think you've kicked off something successful in the Zelda series with having, you know, voice acting involved now. So that's always a good sign.
Definitely.
We should talk about, like... Oh, no, go on, Matt. Sorry. My bad.
No, carry on. Yeah, it's all yours.
All right. I was going to ask. So for Revali in particular... what was it like to play as an antagonistic hero with him, rather than, you know, sort of a more a wholesome character like Daruk or anything like that? Like, what was it like playing specifically as a character that was almost an anti-hero in a sense?
I mean, I think he's the most sensible champion. Like, okay, yeah. so obviously, Urbosa is very confident and could probably hold her own.
She's a badass.
Because she knows she can hold her own, she's willing to listen to others because, you know, if push comes to shove, she can do her own thing. But Revali was really the only champion to go, this is kind of sus. And I think he has every right, especially as someone who spent the amount of time he did to make sure that he mastered his special skills, to be not only envious but suspicious of some rando walking in that none of the other champions have any knowledge about, but are so willing to immediately become subordinates to. Like,
that is a good point.
At the very minimum, wouldn't that set off like red flags of, could this be a mole, like a spy among us who's gonna betray us in the end? Like, why doesn't anybody know anything about this person, but we're so willing to trust our livelihoods to him?
Right, it could have been Ganon for all we know. Like,
I think the reason why so many love Revali is the same reason why so many people hate Revali, is because his actions make sense even though they're uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it's going against, you know, you always see Link as this sort of golden hero who comes from nowhere, and you just sort of accept it. You always accept it in the past Zelda games, but to have this character come along who questions that, like you say, it's uncomfortable in some ways for what you're used to, but it makes perfect sense, and it makes for an interesting dynamic that we hadn't seen in the Zelda series before, really, at least to that extent. Definitely.
Right, like having someone really sort of question, is Link, like, you know, is he really someone you can trust just out of nowhere? Like, it's a really good sort of change from what they normally have in the system.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, I think regardless of what people may think of Revali, sometimes going a bit too far, perhaps, we can all agree that We must thank him for the 5 golden words he says. Revali's Gale is now ready, because that is always useful. Best champion move.
The number of times that I've been told by people that they just go, thanks, Sean, every time he says the phrase is amazing.
I'm going to need to start doing that.
Yep, you've got us on something now. It is so useful. You know, if it's raining, you don't need to climb the cliffs. Just launch yourself up there. It's perfect. So... But of course, you don't just voice Revali in the game. You also voice Taber and the Great Deku Tree, which, I mean, for a start, I didn't actually even know that till recently. So that's a testament to, you know, doing a good job of voicing these different characters when I couldn't even tell. So that's a good start. But particularly with the Great Deku Tree, like you said, he's a character, he's unlike Revali, who's an original character, and same with Taber. The Deku Tree is a sort of legacy character. He's been around in Zelda games such as Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker. So was there any more pressure giving this character a voice who people already probably had their own idea of what he sounded like?
You know, I didn't really think about it. Even though I completely agree with you, I actually didn't think about it that way because, you know, I was aware of, you know, this is a character that people have known since Ocarina of Time, you know, since a lot of these other games. Yeah. Now he's going to have... I'm going to be his official first English voice, to the best of my knowledge. Even the CDI games didn't do my boy dirty.
So, you topped it.
But what's really interesting about it is, just speaking professionally, I consider Deku Tree or Great Deku Tree to be my weakest of the three performances. Like, if I had to order them from strongest to weakest, I think the Great Deku Tree was the one that was I had to work the hardest to maintain. But it also was originally the only one I was cast as. Revali and Taber came after, when we were already in the recording process and the opportunity presented itself. But Great Deku Tree was originally the only character that I was slated for. So I just found it really interesting that that's how it turned out, especially because that was a character that was really out of my wheelhouse. And so I had to really dig deep and go, okay, well, if I can't do as deep a baritone as I would like to do for the character, what adjustments can I make in order to create a voice that I can maintain consistently that is still befitting the character?
Yeah, right. I mean, I can only say the way you voiced it pretty much lines up with how I'd read the voice in my head, you know, playing Ocarina of Time as a kid. It's that sort of low, deep booming, but also quite gentle as well. You know, it really comes across the way I'd imagine the Deku Tree. So, I think he did an excellent job of it. And overall, you know, the voice acting in Breath of the Wild, it's a big new direction for the Zelda series. And after hitting it so strong, right from the gate, I can only imagine they're going to keep at this with future Zelda games following suite. So that would be really exciting to see where the Zelda series goes from here. But we're sort of nearing the end here, but one sort of final question. Rather than looking ahead, I'm going to look back a bit. Because, like you mentioned, this was the first Zelda game to really have proper voice acting. But for a bit of a hypothetical, if you could go back and give any of the other past Zelda games voice acting, who is a previous Zelda character that you think you'd like to voice?
I don't know if I have the tenor range for it, but Vati.
Ah, that's a cool... That
either
would be
Vati
really cool
or either Vati or Girahim. I loved reading Girahim's lines out loud, either just on stream by request or whenever I would see clips of it. I love his mannerisms. I love his character. I've played characters like that in the past with Zenk from Fairy Fencer F. I just love how he's elegant and vicious at the same time.
Yeah, he is really a great character. He's definitely one that sort of stuck with me throughout. And, you know, I'd definitely love to see him given full voice acting one day. That would be really cool to see, because thus far we've just sort of got the...
I feel like he's definitely... Yeah.
So what are you saying,
guys? He's definitely one of the more interesting characters in the series, so that would be a good one to see.
Yeah, Skyward Sword's a good sort of pick, because it's one of the early games to give Zelda characters a bit more depth than usual, I would say. We've got a bit more expressive Zelda in that game, and a bit more of an expressive Link, and characters such as Groose, so... That's definitely a game that is deserving of voice acting, so definitely a great answer to that. But I think, unless you've got anything else to say, I think that's all of our questions gone through. Have you got anything else?
I believe that's it.
Yeah, that's it. So, wow, time has gone fast now. But, before we end things off here, I do want to give some special shout-outs. So first of all, I want to give a big shout out to our friend Sam, who he works on the logo, the thumbnails, and he'll be editing this video, and he set this whole thing up. So there's a running joke that I pay
you
him.
You set me up.
I'm sorry. It was all we're going to lock you back in the smart fridge. It was all part of the act.
No.
I owe Sam a lot because we say I pay him in Kit Kats, but I owe him a life supply at this point, so he's going to be stacked. But also, of course, thank you to you, Kai, for being my co-host as usual. We'd like to tell people where they can find you at.
All good, man. Happy to be here. Yeah, you can find me at twitch.tv/Faskorion on Twitch. You know, I'm taking a small break right now, but I normally stream open world games, Breath of the Wild, Odyssey, Skyrim, Xenoblade if I can. so yeah, you can check me out there.
And you know, of course, go on, Sean.
Do you think you're going to do one of the new Monster Hunter games, like Monster Hunter Rise?
I'm very tempted to give it a try, yeah. I've never played one before, but it's appealing. Very appealing.
It did look good. That was a strong direct there.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, a huge thanks to you, Sean, for taking time out of your busy schedule to do this with us. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
And
yeah, no problem.
Would you like to tell people where they can find you at?
Easiest places are both Twitch and Twitter. Same name on both, SONICMEGA, Sonic Mega. Twitter for the crap posting and Twitch streams for the fun posting. But yeah, that's basically the best way to interact with me because otherwise, at this point, I am working or editing audio or trying to get a decent amount of sleep every single day.
Right.
I don't blame you. You definitely seem very on top of things for how much stuff you've got going on. So,
I'm not. I'm just very good at doggy paddling.
Right. Well, regardless, we appreciate you being here regardless, man. So.
Definitely. And, you know, we'll have a link to all of those in the description below. So do go check them out. And, you know, of course, we're excited to see what you might voice in the future. Well, any game or anime that has your voice behind it is definitely one that's got my interest. So we're looking forward to seeing
where the future takes it. Best way to keep on top of that is definitely to follow my Twitter, because as soon as I'm able to announce stuff, that's the first place it happens.
Definitely. Right. Okay. Everyone, if you haven't, go give them a follow, both of those places, and check into some of the Twitch streams, because I've only been able to catch some of the videos based on the time zones, but they are a lot of fun. And what are you playing through at the moment again, Sean?
Right now, it is splitting my time between Super Mario 3D All-Stars, in which we are doing all mission stars. So we only have finished the game when we've collected every star that has a mission attached to it. And then I'm also doing Trails of Cold Steel 1 through 3. It's easy mode run because we're doing it for the story, but I want everyone to be caught up on what happens in the first three games so that when the fourth drops at the end of October, we can jump right into it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah. And, you know, that's the show then. So, you know, thank you so much, everyone, for watching. And please stay tuned to Bunch of Jokers for monthly Nintendo podcasts and some extra sort of videos as well. We'll have a podcast out next week, so do check that out. And, you know, we'll see you all next time. Goodbye.
Bye.